Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Got a great business idea but no website? Theme Valet, the world's friendliest WordPress website setup service, are giving away a $1,500 epic website launch package for just one lucky winner, and that could be you. Including 1 year's hosting, a WordPress theme, and lots of awesome things, it's everything you need to get your business off to a great kickstart. To enter this totally free giveaway, visit themevalet.com/win. That's themevalet.com/win, and join the giveaway today.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It's so very cool of you to join me again today. Today we're going to try something very, very, very new and very cool, I think. Every single interview I do, I have an interview sheet that I've created, this PDF that I fill out as I'm doing it, and I literally just do it to be engaged in the conversation and to be able to ask follow-up questions and to sort of take my understanding of my guest to a more meaningful level during my conversation. They're messy. They're written by hand. They have the potential hacks on them, any links that I'm thinking we should mention in show notes, and then literally just the notes, half a page of notes that I take during the conversation. I've been told that they might be really interesting to you. To get kind of a deeper insight into how the conversation's going, you can take a look at it and maybe follow along as you listen to the interview, and it might help. So let's try something. All you need to get this instantly sent to your phone is to text 44222 with the message HTE148, no spaces, HTE148. That represents episode 148 that it is today. So that's text 44222 with the message HTE148, and I will send you the interview sheet immediately. Now let's do this. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a writer, marketing expert, and an award-winning entrepreneur and advisor. He has been assessing businesses for 15 years, and his expertise includes entrepreneurship and subscription-based marketing. He is the founder of 5 companies, including the Value Builder System, an online platform with a suite of tools designed to build company value over time. My guest is the author of the books Built to Sell, Creating a Business That Can Thrive Without You, which was recognized as one of the best business books of 2011 by Fortune and Inc. magazines, and The Automatic Customer, Creating Subscription Business in Any Industry. Now, let's hack. John Warlow. Whether you are an entrepreneur or not, sales can be tough, but it doesn't have to be. With Pipedrive, the CRM for small teams with big ambitions, the pain and frustration of tracking deals with email and spreadsheet is gone forever. Salespeople and entrepreneurs love Pipedrive because it visualizes your sales pipeline, highlighting opportunities and potential problems, ultimately ensuring important activities and conversations don't get dropped. Pipedrive is easy to use and simple to get started. You can be up and running in minutes. If you need extra help, Pipedrive also has great tutorials and an incredibly responsive support team. Some other cool things about Pipedrive include forecasting, both iOS and Android mobile apps, awesome integration with Google Maps, MailChimp, Zapier, Yesware, and more. Plus, they have a powerful API for those that like to build their own solutions. Head over to pipedrive.com/hack to start your 30-day free trial today. That's pipedrive.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have another very, very special Canadian guest. I love this. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely my pleasure. All right, John, let's jump into this. John, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Oh man, I think maybe just taking action. I don't profess to be the smartest guy in the room, but I guess the one thing that I do try to do is act. You know, I live by the mantra, you know, progress, not perfection, which is actually a strategic coach mantra. But I try to, you know, just act. And if it fails, know that we're one step closer to success. I don't spend a lot of time navel gazing, thinking, just trying to act as much as I can.
And I like that. I love the progress, not perfection, because it's a good mantra just for life in general, I guess. We need to kind of do that. Is this something you've had to sort of learn along the way, or is this something that you had like from birth sort of innately within you, this idea that you could grow as you went rather than you had to know it all before you started?
I think it's actually something I've had to learn. My family, my dad was a corporate guy, worked in a big company. And I've always felt a little bit between those two worlds, in the sense that I felt like I understood what my dad was sort of going off and doing his corporate job. I felt like I understood that world, and I had empathy for people who did that job. And at times I've even considered that role for me. But I, at the same time, I always felt more naturally inclined to the sort of up by the bootstraps, figuring it out as you go along, kind of pioneering. And in my early days, I was going down the route of joining the kind of corporate world. I worked for a big company in my first job out of university. And I kind of had to learn that there was another way to go about making a living, this kind of hacking your way through life, as opposed to very linear through a corporate job. And so I wouldn't say I was a natural entrepreneur, if you know what I mean. I had a few entrepreneurial ventures when I was a kid, but not, you know, not the same degree that you hear other people that have had, you know, tremendous sort of businesses when they were in high school kind of thing. That wasn't me.
And so you said that obviously you related to, in a certain way, to the corporate structure that your father went to, which lots of us can obviously relate to that. And you've said that you've actually at times thought about taking that route yourself. When's the last time you thought that?
Oh, a long time ago. I mean, this would have been...
You don't have those days where you're like, this is, I should just go get a job because this is hard.
You know, the only thing I've felt sometimes lately is a yearning to work with my hands. I left my last job in sort of corporate world was 1995, and I've been an entrepreneur since then. So to give you a sense, that's 20 years. So that's a long time to spend working, you know, convincing people to do things, convincing, like leading people, working with ideas, trying to bring ideas to market, selling. It's all very intangible in the sense. And lately, I've sort of had a slight tinge of jealousy when I see people that actually work with their hands. You know, they're farming a piece of land, or they're whittling a piece of wood into something. And that might be just foreshadowing what I'll do in my sunset years one day. But there's just been that little tinge of, man, I'd love to actually work with my hands again. And it's, you know, again, I don't know if it's just I'm getting burnt out of 20 years of entrepreneurship or not. But that's the honest truth.
It's because you haven't done it. As soon as you've done it, you'll realize it's absolute hell.
Yeah.
And that you're lucky that you don't have to do it.
I want to go back to making software, man.
Exactly. Like, I started like in construction and stuff. Like, I had a construction business offline like 10 years ago. Oh. And like, my dad's a contractor. I kind of grew up in that. And then I had to sell that business and just figure out this whole online thing, because it was like, there's no way I can do this when I'm 40. Like, my body won't do this. Then when I'm 50, like, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. So trust me, it's glorified and it looks great, but it's hard work, man. So would you consider yourself at this point, I guess, completely sort of unemployable? Like, could you ever work for somebody else at this point now if the right sort of opportunity came up?
I probably could for a short spell. I worked, my last company was acquired by a large publicly traded company in 2008, and I worked for that company for a year. And so I could stomach it for a short time, but not much longer than that. I don't know if you've ever done a Kolbe test, K-O-L-B.
No.
I think it's actually K-O-L-B-E. I'd recommend anybody do it. Basically, I think it's $50 or something. It's a personality test. And you can go in and rate yourself on these four attributes. There's Quick Start, which is the measure of how entrepreneurial you are. Fact Finder, which is the measure of how much information you need before acting. Follow Through, which is how good you are at following systems. And then Implementer, which is how good you are with your hands. And it gives you a score of 10 on each of those four attributes. And it can be an interesting way to sort of evaluate your strengths and so forth. Anyways, I'm a 4 on Follow Through. And what that means is, If you give me a system, I can follow it, but I'm not going to initiate creating a system. So in a Fortune 500 context, I'm not a great employee, but I, you know, if asked to follow a system, I'm not so rebellious that I would not follow the system. There are a lot of entrepreneurs who would be like a 2-1 follow through, meaning they actively look for ways to circumvent the system. That's not me, but there are people like that. So that's Kolbe. I think it's kolbe.com or .ca. I think it's .com.
K-O-L-B-E.
Yeah. We're not affiliated with them. So, yeah, you know, I'm not going to get a piece of the action but it's worth doing. I think it's a good test.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'll link to that in the show notes for everyone. So taking action and sort of the whole progress, not perfection. It's your one thing. Now, every expert tells us the whole 80-20 rule, right? Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at, delegate the rest. John, can you tell me something that you're absolutely not good at in your business?
Oh my God, we have all day. I'm a piss poor manager of people. I am a terrible person when it comes to any process, like developing processes. I'm bad at doing that. So if we need to develop a 10-step process for billing a customer, for example, I'm like the world's worst guy to do that. God, any detail-oriented thing, I'm terrible at. Any very, like with lots of moving parts, complexity overwhelms my brain. So I'm the guy that has to constantly try to take a very complicated thing. Like if someone's explaining something complicated to me, what I have to do is sort of find an analogy. So I'll be like, okay, I kind of get it. It's sort of like you're doing X and try to come up with a really simple analogy. And that's just the way my brain works. So if you ask me to sit down and really process a lot of data or really think through something very complex, my mind just blows up and I just get paralyzed.
Man, that's a lot of things that you're just trying to get at. And those sound like the business details of a business, yet you've successfully run many businesses. That's what I love to hear. So
there's any
twice you've mentioned now,
go ahead.
Processes, you were absolutely terrible at. You can follow them, but you can't create them. Mm. So was there a time where you're like, where you sort of realized this about yourself and where you realized that it was, you were terrible at it, but your businesses kind of required it?
We're going through that right now to be clear. So this is my fifth business. We're just, you know, just kind of in that growth stage. We've been in around for 3 years. We've got, I guess, about 12 employees, and we've had a couple of people leave. We've been remote. People have worked remotely, and we're just actually physically coming together now in two physical offices. And so we're having to let go of a couple of people who work remotely and bring their roles in-house. And so I've realized that there's tons of information inside the heads of the people that work remotely, and we need to kind of codify that information and build processes so other people can follow their processes. So we're going through it right now. And yeah, I suck at it.
But you put somebody in place, I'm assuming, who is good at it.
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I hired somebody to create a set of standard operating procedures or SOPs and she's doing it. And in my former companies, my former companies were much larger than the one I have today. So we've gone through that stage, but it's a natural stage every entrepreneurial venture goes through. In the beginning, you're just trying to get revenue. You're trying to get something to stick. You're trying to figure it out, and building a bunch of processes is totally worthless because the business is going to completely change from what you started to do to what it will eventually become. And that's every business that I've ever run. It's Tesla, it's Facebook, it's businesses much larger than ones that I've started. They all start with one idea and virtually every one of them morph into a very different business. And so, you know, spending hours and months creating a bunch of processes for a business that's not going to be around in its same iteration now is worthless time. But once you get to half a dozen employees or a dozen employees, a million or two in revenue, that's when all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, now this is actually a real business. Now it's time to start codifying and building process and creating something that people can follow. Because once you get a half dozen employees or again, a million or two in revenue, that's when you can start to sort of, you're starting to kind of narrow down on what the business is. It's still going to evolve lots of times before you really scale, but you know, it's small increments at that point, as opposed to just major pivots. Think of a salmon moving up, like in its dying gasps, like going for back, like flipping on its side, not its front. I mean, the early few years of a business, I mean, you're flip-flopping to try to just find something that's going to work.
And this business you're talking about is Value Builder System, right?
The one I run today is Value Builder System. Yeah.
And so, okay, let's see if we can figure this out for, I want to help the listener and myself understand this right now. So you, I mean, obviously you're the guy, you wrote the best-selling book, Built to Sell. You've built businesses and sold them, and you are probably thinking of doing that again. So you are doing this in a methodical sort of way. So the idea, and you say like how you've had much bigger businesses, but still I know that myself included, I'm listening right now and you have 12 employees. That's a fairly sizable business, right? So it started with you, John, and you went obviously to, you like you say, six maybe employees, like half dozen, then to a dozen. So what is with, like, did you have like the end sort of in mind when you start? And what was the thought process of, or who did you hire first? Or was it like a lot of six people first? Like, I need these people in place. How did that work, that process?
I mean, in our company, we hired some salespeople first. And then we hired customer care people to kind of care for the customers that we were winning. And then eventually sort of accounting and an accounting person. And, you know, in retrospect, one of the key hires that frees an entrepreneur up very early, and it's probably one that I didn't hire for fast enough in this current role, and there's a reason for that I can get into, but is actually the office manager job. And the office manager being typically a you know, jack of or janer of all trades, where you're getting them to do your bookkeeping, your accounting, your you know, their general administration, probably acting as your assistant for scheduling and so forth. And physically being there, you know, so when the internet gets run through your building, you know, you've got someone to deal with that person. When the courier company shows up, it's not you signing for the courier chip. And this whole role may sound very administrative and very weird as a role to start with. But actually, I think it's physically one of the most important jobs to hire early for, because it frees you up as the founder and owner to get out of that stuff and get back to working on your product and working with your customers. And so, you know, in this current business, as I mentioned, we started totally remotely. I was living in Europe at the time. And so we started hiring employees remotely. They'd work from home. So we had someone in St. John, New Brunswick, and someone in Michigan, and someone in Portland. And what we really missed was that physical person. And so it was still me personally, you know, when I would sign a book to somebody, because I was working in Europe, I'd have to physically put it in an envelope, take it down to the post office, mail it. And you say, well, that doesn't sound like much, but you do that enough times a day and you spend all your day, and then you multiply it by 10 other tasks that are completely administrative in nature. Eventually, you're spending all your time on very administrative tasks and just none of your time on strategic thinking. So I think that office manager role, that physical person that you can actually be shoulder to shoulder with, that you can turn to as your sort of right-hand person, that's a critical hire early. And I think, you know, I made the mistake this time around of waiting too long. And it's caused strain in the business because we haven't had that.
Does that person actually do, say, management of the next hires too?
No, I mean, not in our case, they don't, but it's mostly more administrative tasks. It's just that you don't realize all those stupid little interactions you have throughout the day because you're the most senior person in the company. If you process credit cards, you got to be the one to talk to the credit card processing company. If you have a water cooler in your office, when the guy comes and delivers the water, it's you who has to sign for it. I mean, I'm using very trivial examples to try to communicate the point that there are just thousands of these little interruptions all day that you don't really think about until you actually start to write them down. And you realize, oh my gosh, I'm spending all my time doing completely stupid, trivial things. Because I'm the kind of guy in the office. Whereas if you hire for that early, you just create and you sort of defend your time for much more important things.
Yeah. Very well said. Okay, John, we're going to move on to projects. So projects can be a very loose term. It could be even just Value Builder System as a full big project, or else now new features or projects within this. I would love to know sort of the process, and if you have a written process or if it's just in your head or your gut, but what is the process when an idea comes through your inbox or your desk? Now, what's the process that you go through to decide whether this project is worth putting your time, money, and resources into?
First thing I do is start in Evernote. So I'm a huge believer in Evernote. And if you haven't used Evernote, it's basically an application where you download the app on your phone, your tablet, your PC, and then all of your notes sync up, kind of like Microsoft OneNote, if you ever used that. And they sync up and you can tag them. So I create an Evernote and I tag it with the idea, you know, the project you mentioned. So if it's a new book I'm writing, or if it's a new business I'm thinking of starting, or a new product we're thinking of launching, I'll tag it. And so that every kind of thought I have related to that business gets tagged. If I see a website, a competitor, if I see a course I should take or an event I should attend in the context of learning about that project, I'll tag it. And then wherever I am, on the train, in a plane, in my house, whatever, my office, I can pull up that Evernote, pull up that tagging system, and then look at all my notes and start to really formulate. So that's the first thing I do.
So, but before that, how do you decide what that book is that you should write? Or how did you decide that even Value Builder System was a viable business that people would pay you money for?
Very iterative. And that's why I'm like, to go back to the beginning of the conversation, I'm a believer in action rather than sort of pondering and progress, not perfection. So the reason, I don't really believe in writing a business plan. And I think that's probably a lot of wasted time. What I think you should do is, and this is an Eric Ries concept, a basic viable product. I can't remember what he calls it in his book, Lean Startup, but I think it's minimal viable product. But basically conceptualize what you want to go sell and try to go sell it. Even if it's just a straw man or a wireframe of what you envision doing, try to go sell it to people. Say, hey, if I built this, would you buy it? Or I built this, will you buy it? That's what Matt Meeker did when he started BarkBox, which was a subscription-based company I wrote about in my latest book. They wanted to create a subscription-based program for dog owners where they would send a box of dog treats every month in the mail as a surprise for little Fido. And Matt wanted to figure out if it would work as a concept. And so instead of running a bunch of focus groups and writing a bunch of nonsensical business plans, he went to a dog park and he took his phone and he had the little app that allows you to accept a credit card on the phone. And he built a basic form and he said, look, I'm starting this company. We're going to send you a box of dog treats once a month. You know, do you want to buy it? Cost you $29 a month. And if you do, let me just kind of take your credit card right here. That was his market research. And so I'm a huge believer in, if you have an idea, it's just that, an idea, until you can get someone to buy it. And then it becomes a business.
Yes, yes. Very well said. Very well said. So this has been a lot of fun, but we need to wrap up now, John. I want to finish up on this question that I'm calling sort of this idea that I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs and dreamers, we're always looking forward, always sort of projecting our successes into the future. So whether it's 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years down the road, it's when this new book comes out, when I sell this next business, when this happens, I will then be successful. But of course, we never quite get there because by the time we almost get there, we set loftier goals into the future, which I agree we always have to push forward. But sometimes I think we get stuck in this gap where we're never at the success we want. And so we live in this place that's never, ever where we want to be. I would love right now, John, if you could stop. You've done a lot of things. You've had a lot of great successes. You probably had some lows as well. But I would love for you to just stop, turn around, look at everything you've learned in your whole life and career up to this point, and just tell us how you feel about everything up till today.
Mildly dissatisfied would be probably the best word that comes to mind, although that's two words.
Enough.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, lots to do, unfulfilled objectives, lots. And I agree with your point wholeheartedly. I think that, you know, the yardstick's always moving, right? So I don't spend a lot of time reflecting on the successes that we've had or that I may have had over the years. I'm constantly sort of in this mode. And I do not a great job of smelling the roses. I have to remind myself to do that a lot. And it's probably a character flaw, to be honest, but I spend a lot of time thinking about the future and don't really take time to look back and say, hey, there's been some good things as well. So yeah, you're not going to learn much from me on that one. If you figure out that formula, you let me know because I spend a lot of time thinking about what could be as opposed to what is or what has been.
Right. And I think we all do. And they're really... Unfortunately, there isn't anything to learn from anyone on this. I just honestly like trying to force people to do it because I think although we do always push forward and strive forward and we have to, sometimes we don't. And I know that people are going to be listening to you, John, and be like, guy's done so much. Like if I could ever do what he's done and now he's, you know what I mean? from the outside, it looks so different than it does from our own heads.
Mm.
And I think we, and so I just, my only goal of that question ever is to hopefully get you to step outside of it and just be like, yeah, no, actually I have done a lot. I mean, people who think they haven't done anything really, they've learned so much, say, in the last 6 months or the last year just about themselves or about business, even if they haven't even started one.
Mm-hmm.
I think we still are progressing, right? And we still, it's worth pondering, I think, once in a while. So that's all.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think maybe it's a natural defense mechanism that I built up over the years to not become complacent, right? So there's, you know, there, you know, when you've had a bit of success and you don't have to worry about, you know, where the next paycheck's going to come from or how you're going to pay the rent, whatever. Like if those boxes are ticked in your life, there is a natural inclination to sort of kick back and say, okay, so, you know, I don't need to kind of do a lot. And so maybe in my, maybe somewhere deep subconsciously, it's a sort of a defense mechanism, knowing that's a pretty empty life, that just sitting back and not really contributing anything. And maybe in my own mind, it's a defense mechanism saying that I know I'm happiest when I'm contributing, when I'm doing something, when I feel like I'm building something towards a, you know, an end. And therefore, you know, my mind is not letting me kind of sit back and say, attaboy, good job. You know, it's just not in my DNA.
Totally. Yeah, that's an excellent answer. And it could also just be I have to stop asking Canadians because we're too humble.
Yeah, you got to start interviewing some other folks.
Okay, John, we've got to talk about your business in passing, but could you specifically tell the listener where to find out more about you and more about your business?
Yeah, so valuebuildersystem.com is where we have built a methodology to improve the value of a privately held company. We've now had 20,000 business owners go through our system. The average business starting with us is receiving offers when they go to sell their business of 3.6 times their pre-tax profit. And when they graduate through this process we take them through, they graduate with a score of 80 or greater. They're on average getting offers of 6.1 times their pre-tax profit, or a 71% increase in the value of their firm. So it's a really powerful process to go through, and it helps the business really figure out how to make it more valuable so that if they want to get acquired, they can do that. And so, yeah, again, that's at valuebuildersystem.com.
That's awesome. And are you on any social media?
Yeah, at Twitter, at, you know, at John Warlow, WARRILLOW, Facebook.com/built to sell.
Excellent. I will link to all of that in the show notes. And yeah, just thank you so much, John, for joining me today. I really do truly appreciate it. And please keep doing what you're doing, because it really is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate the time.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you. Thank you so much, John. I really, really enjoyed that. And I have some serious, serious notes here to look at. And if you want access to those show notes, once again, they'll come straight to your phone or straight to your email inbox, however you prefer. Take out your cell phone right now and text 44222 with the message HTE 148. That's 44222 with the message HTE 148, and you will get this very interview sheet that I have beside me. As I go through this interview sheet, I have four spots where John mentioned things that were really, really kind of profound and really, really got my attention and got me thinking. So I went back and I listened to all four of them. And one of those things was just, it was that one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I'm a piss poor manager of people. I am a terrible person when it comes to any process, like developing processes. I'm bad at doing that. So if we need to develop a 10-step process for billing a customer, for example, I'm like the world's worst guy to do that. God, any detail-oriented thing, I'm terrible at. Any very, like with lots of moving parts, complexity overwhelms my brain.
And that's the hack. John. I love this. Okay, so I'm choosing this not because it's like not on the surface that the hack that you're a piss poor manager and you're just terrible at processes and the world's worst. That's not what this is about. What this is about is John has successfully started and run 5 businesses. He's been acquired by like a multinational company. He's written best-selling books, and he's helped hundreds, if not thousands, of other people grow their businesses and make them built to sell. So John knows what he's doing. John absolutely knows what he's doing, but he also knows what he's not good at. And I don't know if it's just me, but were you listening to John say that part and be like, wow, I'm also terrible at lots of, I'm also not detail oriented, or I'm also the world's worst person at putting together processes or with lots of moving parts. But he knows that, and he just makes up for it. He puts people in place, or he puts processes in place, or he does. You have to know these things about yourself. And you have to know that if you have those same, if you want to call them inadequacies or whatever you want to call them, if you have those same, I'll call them inadequacies as John says, it's not a reason why you cannot be a successful entrepreneur, because John is. And he's the first person to tell you this. What I love about this is that when I ask this question, sometimes my guests are like, let me think. John was just instantly in there. Well, here goes. And he just started with this list. It was almost like I had to cut him off. Okay, all right. That's enough things that you're terrible at. But I love it because he knows that he's bad at it, and he doesn't use that to stop him from going and doing big things. And I want it to not stop you from going and doing these things too. And that's why I love this. Thank you, John. That was awesome. All right. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the website. Check it out. It's great. Get on the email list. It's a good place to be. You're going to get the email from me every Sunday, and also first notification of my book that comes out in another month and a half or so. That's it. It's been fun. I thank you so much. It's always a blast, and I will not take any of more of your time. So until next time, please keep hacking the entrepreneur.